Are you taking the necessary steps to secure your brand story? We'll talk about that in a moment.
Welcome to the Brand Telling Podcast, where we share secrets, systems, and strategies you can use to unleash the power of story to build and grow your brand. The Brand Telling Podcast is brought to you by the award-winning team at Communication Strategy Group, bringing a combined 50-plus years of publishing, agency and client strategy, creative and tactical marketing experience. Please welcome your hosts, Principal and Chief Brand Teller Arthur Germain and Creative Director Michael Simbrom.
On this episode of the Brand Telling Podcast, I'm pleased to introduce my guest, Jim Harrington. Jim is a partner in the New York office of Hoffman & Barron, a full-service law firm specializing in all areas of domestic and international intellectual property law. He has extensive experience in all aspects of intellectual property practice, including both prosecution and litigation. Jim also lectures and participates in panel discussions on various topics of patent law relating to biotechnology. He has served as an adjunct professor for the Entrepreneurship and Intellectual Property Practicum, a clinic offered at Hofstra University School of Law, from fall of 2016 to the present. In addition to all of this, Jim Harrington's a fellow member of the Business Impact Group networking organization that I belong to and where we have become friends. Jim, welcome to the Brand Telling Podcast.
Thank you, Arthur. Glad to be here.
So, Jim, give me and our audience a little bit of background on intellectual property and what that term covers from your perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting, Arthur, because a lot of people don't really know what we're talking about when we call ourselves intellectual property attorneys. Sometimes we get some blank looks, but in general, what we're referring to there when we mention intellectual property, it's really the property value inherent in new technology, artistic and intellectual expression, and goodwill developed in trade and commerce. So basically, you know, what we're talking about are ideas that are being, you know, reduced to some form of tangible medium. And then what we can do by securing those rights in the Patent and Trademark Office, we can actually convert those ideas into assets, we like to say, something where you can, you know, buy, sell those ideas, those assets, use them as collateral, et cetera. So it's an important thing.
Yeah. You know, we come into that, you know, here at the agency a little bit later on. Somebody has a trademarked name or a patented process and they want to promote it. You're working on the kind of the building and the defense of that end. Can you tell me a little bit about what industries Hoffman & Barron specializes in?
Yeah, we handle all forms of technology. So we have electrical engineers that handle, you know, electrical, you know, type inventions. We've got mechanical engineers. We've got software engineers. I have a biology background. We have chemists. We have chemical engineers. So we have people that can handle all sorts of technology. And that really comes more into play, obviously, when we're discussing patents. You know, I could have mentioned earlier when we're talking about intellectual property, in general, we're talking about either patents, trademarks, copyrights, or trade secrets. And so the technical background, you know, comes more into play, obviously, when we're discussing patents.
Sure. But you still want to know, and you guys do know, about these different industries and what's important to them. Tell me a little bit about when you are, you know, working with them around securing a trademark. Where do you begin that process? You know, do you get involved when a client is considering, say, a series of names for their company, their product or their service, or do you come in a little bit later into that process?
No, we come in very early. At least that's certainly the preference, because what we don't want is clients to get too far down the road with a name or a logo that you know, that can't be used for whatever reason. So what we like to do is get involved early with a name or a logo, you know, that the client is considering. And then what we'll do is we'll take a look, see what's out there, make sure that, you know, that's clear for them to use. So again, they don't go too far in their investment for marketing materials, et cetera. And then, you know, then ultimately have to change the name. Because, you know, again, with trademarks, what we're talking about is, you know, a word, name, symbol, device, that's used to identify, you know, the goods or services, or the source of those goods or services. And so there's an important investment there in goodwill that the client is building up when it comes to a trademark. And so we don't want to see those resources wasted. We'd rather get that name or logo clear right from the beginning.
Absolutely. And that can be, you know, a name, like you said, or a logo or a service mark, but it could also be a phrase, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we have taglines. Again, as long as it's anything, you know, that's used to identify the source of those goods or services. So if that's how it's used on the marketing materials or advertising, et cetera, you know, that's protective.
Well, that's great. You know, being in marketing myself, we always like to come up with a name and we think, wow, we've come up with this great name and it obviously we can use it, but that's not always the case, is it?
No. You know, people are very surprised at what's out there already. You know, 'cause what we'll do is we'll check the, you know, the trademark database in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and there could be someone, you know, with a registered mark on the other side of the country, but those registered marks are enforceable throughout the country, and that's really one of the benefits of registering a trademark is, you know, then you can enforce it not only locally, but all over the country. And so there's marks out there that are registered that people haven't seen or heard of. There might even be others using the mark locally, you know, that others haven't discovered yet and could pose a problem when you want to jump in and use it yourself.
How do you go about defending a trademark or a patent once you've secured it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, trademarks and patents are very different. You know, the trademark actually, the rights, unlike a patent, the rights from a trademark actually come from its use, from the use of that name or symbol that causes people to identify, you know, that particular word or name with the source of the goods and services. And so that's sort of built up over time. Whereas it, as an invention, really, you know, should be disclosed for the first time when, you know, when that that patent application is filed on the new invention. So very often for trademarks, we see information come in very often from the salespeople. You know, they're the ones, they're sort of the boots on the ground. And, you know, so they'll report back to their superiors with some information on what a competitor or someone else is doing out there. And then we'll take a look. And if it's something that we think is going to confuse consumers, then we'll go ahead and enforce that trademark. And it's very important to enforce trademarks. Sometimes we have clients that think, well, you know, they're really not a big player, or, you know, they're not really cutting into our sales all that much. Maybe we could let it go. The problem there is that if you let that one go, then if there's another competitor that really is cutting into your market, and you go to try to enforce it against that person, you may have difficulty because you let the first one skate. So you really need to be vigilant when it comes to the trademarks. And with patents, it's similar. You know, we get some intel either from the sales force or elsewhere. And, you know, we typically, you know, try to resolve it amicably with a cease and desist letter, putting the other side on notice that they're infringing our client's intellectual property rights. We'll try to resolve it as quickly and amicably and cheaply as possible. But, you know, sometimes we need to ramp it up all the way up to a lawsuit if necessary.
Well, it's really interesting. I think, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that just coming up with the idea, the name, the slogan, the tagline isn't enough. I mean, actually making use of that in commerce, making sure that you are using it and, you know, and that you're, you know, labeling it, saying with a TM or with an R, if it's a, you know, if it's a service mark, that's absolutely necessary in order to really secure and defend your brand.
Yeah. You know, very often, you know, we'll have clients that may not have a registered, you know, their mark may not be registered and they can just put the TM on there. To try to at least establish, you know, some common law rights, but there are certainly a number of benefits to having that mark registered with the trademark office and getting that R in the circle, and that includes like the one I mentioned before, having nationwide rights to enforce it, you know, enforce that mark anywhere, the ability to bring the case into federal court, benefits in connection with damages. So it can be an important thing to get those marks registered if it's important to the business.
So are there particular challenges that you've faced in the past, whether it's just a name that just couldn't be secured or trademark that just, you know, it didn't reach the level that was required to become a trademark with the U.S. Patent Trade Organization?
Yeah, typically what we do, it kind of gets back to your earlier question, Arthur, as far as our early involvement. What we like to do is have that discussion early on so that, you know, the client really isn't wasting money on a mark that we have a pretty good feeling is not going to go anywhere. Not only because someone else may be using it, but you know, sometimes clients will come to us with marks that are descriptive. That's another requirement for the registrability of a mark is it can't be descriptive of the goods. And so it's not unusual for us to, you know, have clients come to us with a mark that they think is clever because it essentially describes what it is they're trying to sell. But really the stronger marks are those sort of fanciful marks that really don't, you know, really describe the goods or services. It really, I think, allows consumers to make more of a connection between, you know, the mark and the source of those goods. Google is a good example. It's not, you know, search engines are us, or, you know, or whatever. It's Google. It's nothing. It's just kind of a weird word and just people make that connection, you know. So, and so those really are the best marks. So, and but that can be a problem.
I think that makes a lot of sense because you know, we know in the last 10-20 years, we know of a lot of brands that the name alone is not meaningful. It's the promise that has been imbued behind the name that we look at. You know, Amazon. You know, growing up, Amazon was a river, right? But it means something different to anyone who's born in the last 20 years. And so, you know, the power that goes behind that you don't want to lose necessarily. Because you haven't taken the proper steps to make use of it. Although Amazon, I think, has taken all the proper steps to to secure that.
Yeah. I don't think we have to worry about that. But you're right. It is an important asset to the business. You know, that connection in the mind of the consumer. You really want to be able to capture that and protect it as best you can.
Yep. And I love that from ideas to assets, I think, is a really great great way to describe you know, what you're taking for a client, how you're taking them from that drawing board and then out to something that can profit them.
Yeah. And like I said before, you know, even beyond the trademarks, which is really sort of the most obvious choice when we're talking about protecting one's brand. But, you know, the other sources of IP, you know, can be important too. I mean, if you're starting a new brand, it's launching a new product, and one that could be, you know, protected by a patent because it's somewhat inventive, having that brand or that product protected by a patent could be important. It could be the way that it looks, so we could get a design patent or a registered trade dress for the way that it looks. If it again is something that people are going to associate with the source of the goods, copyright. If there are some printed materials that are somewhat artistic that you could protect, or even a trade secret. If it's a brand that's being manufactured by a unique process that would give you a competitive advantage by having people not know about it. Trade dress can be used to protect one's brand. So really, trademarks is the obvious example, but all these various forms of intellectual property could be important in protecting a company's brand.
Well, and I think that is kind of the superpower that you bring to a client is the understanding, the deeper understanding that intellectual property spans so many different things. We often think about the trademark, but as you've just explained, it goes much deeper than that. So, Jim, I really have appreciated our discussion today. Is there a way that if someone's listening, they can get in touch with you to learn a little bit more about your services?
Yeah, if they wanted more information about the firm or IP in general, they could certainly go to our website, hbiplaw.com. Give us a call, 516-822-3550.
That's great. And Jim, thank you again for being a guest today on the Brand Telling Podcast.
Okay. Thank you, Arthur. I enjoyed it.
This is Arthur Germain. Thank you for joining us.
Build a better brand story for your business. Schedule a complimentary consultation with the Brand Tellers at Communication Strategy Group. Send a note to contact-us@gocsg.com or visit us at communicationstrategygroup.com/contact.